This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm here. Wow. Not sure about you, but wow, what a year. And we're coming to a close as our industry continues to innovate. And I'll be here to offer up the best topics and discussions to help you win. And your continued support is so, so appreciated. Here is to the last episode of Remarkable Results Radio for 2020. It's number 601. Hey, Dave Hobbs is here, the lead technical trainer and course developer for Delphi Products and Service Solutions. Dave's back, and he's graced us recently with episode 592, where he talks about how to avoid comebacks. Now today he's offering you his insights on ADASH training, virtual classes, and how to become a thermostat, not a thermometer. You can find Dave's other episodes and the key talking points for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E601. Hey, never miss one shop tour we present each week. You know, you can catch all the episodes on aftermarketweekly.com's website. And now listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Yep, Aftermarket Weekly is now a podcast. And of course, we're mobile. Hey, Carm Capriato here, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy. So thankful for the sponsors that make the Aftermarket's premier podcast available to you. I want to thank Napa Gold Certified for sponsoring this episode. Due to the current restrictions in place in Las Vegas, Napa has made the proactive decision to postpone the Napa Expo. We remain committed to provide a valuable in-person experience at the proper time and look forward to hosting you when we can do so safely. Hey, can you give me about 3 minutes? Hey, please go to remarkableresults.biz/survey. I want to hear your thoughts and understand your insights on the podcast. And thanks for being with me in the front row of life in the automotive service business. Hey, warm welcome to Dave Hobbs again. Hi, Dave. How you doing, man?
Good.
Glad you're here, man. Dave Hobbs, senior field trainer and curriculum developer, Delphi Technologies, and an ASE Master Tag L1 and L3. So we're doing a bunch of these because I love hearing from you. You're passionate about anything you talk about. I've watched you in seminars, and you're just like the Energizer Bunny, Dave.
Thank you.
You're close to the industry, you're close to technicians, you're close to owners, you're with this huge company that's connected. Let's talk about technician morale, you know, the knowledge base that's going on and how well they're doing with that. And also, as a side note, the love affair we have with cars as an industry.
It's the only salvation, really, to stay in the industry, as far as I'm concerned. If it wasn't for things like auto racing, building street rods, car shows. That's my favorite. I like to go to car shows. I think a lot of us would just jump out. I keep hearing this over and over again from technicians. If my kid ever picks up a wrench, I'll break their arm. And from shop owners, I can't wait till I can sell this place and retire and be done with it. And typically they miss it. Even they miss the abuse. So they're miserable. They're retired too early, or maybe their kid should have took up in their shoes because they're going nowhere. And you don't go nowhere when you're in the auto repair business. You always have a job. That's the big thing. That's a silver lining in this cloud. But I really have compassion and not sorrow, pity, all right, but compassion for the big difference between the two for technicians that are having to buy a lot of tools, see some of the information, even oftentimes directly from the OEMs, that's incorrect, having crabby, picky customers that blame the technician on everything that happens because they touched their car a year ago or a month ago, and just on and on. I mean, the list of grievances that we can sometimes build up is almost endless. So it's like, why do we do it? Because we don't really get paid a super amount of money. We're not like Wall Street brokers, you know?
Frustration, you said. Who's in charge of that?
My opinion is every tech, every shop owner, every service advisor needs to become more like a thermostat than a thermometer. When things start heating up with frustration or cooling down with apathy, thermometers react. Thermostats do something. I mean, thermometers just go up, the temperature goes up, they go down, the temperature goes down. Thermostats do something. They cool the place down, they heat the place up. That's a sign of a good leader, and not necessarily a shop owner or manager, you know, shop foreman. You as a lead tech, you as a veteran tech, you can be that leader. You can set that thermostat, not physically, but metaphorically, and bring that shop into some excitement. When things start cooling down, you get apathy, or cool things down when you start getting frustrated and the wrench throwing fits.
And so you just explained what I was thinking about, Dave, is that you have to take charge. And I asked the question, who's in charge? Well, you have to take charge. And you've got to figure out, if the customers are beating on you, then you need some new customers. If you're frustrated as an owner that there's too many comebacks, well, then you need to worry about training. In my opinion, there are solutions to every single problem that we have. I think you could get up and out of your own way if you listen, if you work at it, if you try, if you learn.
Carm, do you hear this? You do a lot of interviews, and I teach classes, and I do a fair amount of networking and chit-chat with techs before and after classes. And do you hear this? Sometimes you just have to fire the customer.
Yeah.
I think personally, and maybe I'm outdated, maybe I just need to run a shop again, but I think it's more rare of an occurrence, more of an exception than a rule. I mean, maybe not as rare as getting divorced from your spouse, but close to that.
I asked a question recently to a very successful multi-shop owner, and they say, rarely. But we have, on occasion, done it, because the image, the culture, the marketing, everything that they do draws the kind of customers to them that they don't have to fire.
Price shoppers is a major annoyance. I understand that. I get it. I've had the phone calls myself, you know, how much and how soon, and we haven't even seen the car or had an adequate description of the problem, much less a road test and initial assessment. And they want to know these things over the phone. So I get it. I've heard it for decades, but oftentimes the price shopper, it's the only thing they knew to do is ask how much and how soon, or maybe what do you think it is? They don't know how to ask, do you have the latest SAE standard on an air conditioning recovery, recharge, and recycling machine? They don't know that.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Dave talks about an important missing ingredient in virtual training. Hey, it's Carm here. Today, I have a special message for Napa Auto Care Centers who are looking to take the next step in growing their business and partnership. Now, if you're ready to strive and take it to the next level, Napa invites you to consider Gold Certification. Gold Certification is a premier tier of Napa Auto Care that recognizes repair shops with a higher level of participation in the Auto Care program. The program was built by Auto Care Centers for Auto Care Centers to provide a consistent consumer experience, maximize technology leverage, and reward Napa's most committed partners. When consumers visit a gold-certified auto care center, whether it's a small facility in a rural community or a multi-bay shop in a large metropolitan area, they can expect a first-class service repair experience. This includes a well-trained staff using today's technology and quality Napa parts in a comfortable, up-to-date facility. Customers at gold-certified shops will also enjoy an extended parts and labor warranty, valuable saving opportunities, along with access to credit to pay for needed repairs, and a whole lot more. Here's what you need to qualify for the program. First, you need to be an active auto care partner for at least 12 months and have a steady business presence in your market for at least 2 years. Then to become gold certified, it's necessary to meet specific requirements, chosen because they create the most consistent consumer experience and proven to generate the most significant results for auto care centers across the country. Some of these include using digital vehicle inspection, having at least one ASE Master Certified Technician, a co-branded exterior, and offer consumer financing through Napa Easy Pay. You must also be an active member of a business development group. Once your shop achieves gold certification, you'll receive a number of benefits, including priority placement on Napa's shop locator pages, an allowance for marketing funds, 3636 peace of mind and local labor coverage, access to auto tech training, Napa Trax shop management system, smart sign digital menu board, and more. Talk with your servicing Napa store to find out everything you need to know about becoming a gold certified shop. The more I hear from business coaches and successful shop owners. That's the beauty of this podcast. You know, we're interviewing the essential voices of the industry, and anyone who wants to come by and pull on that great knowledge, you don't have to fire the customer. You don't have to move on with technicians. You need to listen to them. You need to know what's going on. And oh, by the way, let me just jump back 30 seconds. You said, how much is this? How much is this? Is everyone tells me, Carm, they don't know what else to ask, so they ask price. Okay. So you need to take charge of that transaction, not over explain things, but tell them why things need to be done. And a lot of times you can convince them that money is not the issue.
I don't think I've ever mentioned this story to you. I've told it before, so forgive me if I repeat it on your show, but I had an article I was writing for a trade magazine, and I wanted to preface it with a little bit about a Facebook or social media post. It was a meme, or actually a meme. It was an old postcard from like the early 1900s when the Model Ts were new. And the postcard was from a Ford dealership in Minot, North Dakota. It was showing the prices for an engine, piston ring, re-ring, valve job. And it was like, you know, $5. And, you know, the most expensive thing was a set of tires, because tires were really, I mean, rubber was more rare then than it is now. And so I just thought it'd be a great precept for this article if I found out what the prices were for similar operations today at a Ford dealership in that same town. So I called them, and I made the mistake of not letting them in on the little scam or whatever, the little, not really a prank, but the little test I was doing. And I just acted, I think, you know what I'll do? I'll act like a customer. And I picked a vehicle and a real problem and a real code, whatever it was. I think it was an EGR code. And I said, what is your cost? Can you give me a ballpark? I mean, I don't know if we're talking. I even baited them to give me some sort of warm, fuzzy feeling to spin me around from a price shopper to maybe come on in and get work done. So I'm like saying, it's like, are we talking $50 or $500 or $3,500? I got this code. Somebody told me I needed an EGR valve. What can you tell me? And that service advisor at that Ford dealership, I'm not even sure it was Minot, North Dakota. It might have been another little town near there, but I found some in the close proximity to make it apples and apples, you know, 100 years later. And oh, I felt so abused. I felt like I was asking for his bank routing and PIN number. It's like, and so I even asked, what is your hourly rate? Do you have maybe a hourly rate for minor routine stuff? Maybe a different hourly rate for something high tech like this? I couldn't bait a decent answer out of that person to save my life. He was bound and determined to treat me like a dirt bag price shopper, demanding I bring the vehicle in and pay him an hour of diagnostic time.
There's a lot of lessons there to be learned. But, you know, going back to, you know, how you're feeling and who's in charge and why you're frustrated, recently did an Aftermarket Weekly show. Tom Hamm came on and brought this incredible survey about work environment. What kind of place are we providing for our people? I mean, do they want to come to work? Do they want to come to work at 8:30 and leave at 8:31? Because, you know, it could be air conditioning, it could be heat, it could be, you know, dirt, it could be organization, it could be lighting and all that stuff. And again, I go back to, you know, we were talking about working technician morale and it's who's in charge.
I know Tom Hamm, and I go to work for him in a heartbeat. He's a good guy. He's a thermostat as well, not a thermometer. He does something about it being too cold or too hot. That's really the thing. We have it within our control. I mean, the only thing you can really change is your own attitude. But unfortunately, that's not taught in VOTEC school. And it's taught by the School of Hard Knocks, and some people never get it. But they're good at wrenching, so they become shop owners. And they're just as frustrated owning the shop as they were wrenching. And I think the remedy is, this is going to sound corny, but a public relations class, Dale Carnegie. I took it in the 80s. My dad, it was like a preacher, a Baptist preacher, just thumping on this thing, you know? It was almost my dad's religion. It's like Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie changed my life. So I went, what was it, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever the thing was, skeptically, because dad was paying for it. And I'm telling you, it really changed things. And I need refreshers every now and then, but it taught how to win friends and influence people.
Yeah, absolutely. Toastmasters, another great thing to be going to build self-confidence in your ability to communicate. No one taught us how to be good listeners. I mean, I think today's college courses, and you know, somebody write in and tell me I'm right or wrong, are doing more to teach leadership and communication skills than they ever did when many of us went through that education process. But let's talk about your classes. Even if you're doing online today or the leader led that you've done for years, what's going on with the transference of technician knowledge? Who's coming to classes? What do they want to learn?
You know, some of the names I see when I do Zoom meetings, because that's the one I can see names. I guess GoToWebinar, I've done those for some of our customers, prefer that over Zoom. I can see some names too, but I typically am too busy to scroll that much. But when we have a decent crowd and I see a few familiar names, you know, okay, oh, I know that person. I really appreciate them logging in. But there's a lot of folks I don't know. So since it's impersonal, I mean, at least you and I know each other. And, you know, I recognize your face, you recognize mine. We've been together in person, but they don't have their cameras on. So I'm just talking into like a Dixie cup with this, I assume somebody's on the other end of the string, and there's not much interaction. It's very difficult to get that interaction with distance learning. So I really can't wait to get back to the live training, even though supposedly it's prehistoric and will be replaced forever by this stuff.
Yeah, but think about the energy that you get from that room and the eye contact and what it means and who's with you and who's not. I believe that online is going to serve a purpose. It's going to be there, but I think people are going to end up being thirsty for Dave Hobbs to be in front of me.
With the mask scare and all that stuff, I guess I have caught myself a few times giving a bit of a shower to the front row. I have to learn how to not have a little bit of spit come out. That today could cause a panic, all right, attack on the front row. So I'm telling this, people now will go, oh, I'm in a Hobbs class. I'm going to the back of the room, right, just in case. The COVID's fixed, but it's still the flu season, all right? But yeah, I miss it. I got done with an ADIS class, and I thought it went very well. The multimedia stuff worked pretty good, and I got through the class exactly on time with some good stories, and I get done, and it's so anticlimactic. I walk into the other room, and I start complaining to my wife, saying, honey, I'm just so used to they come up at the end of class, they got two or three questions, they want to shake your hand, they want to say, hey, I really appreciate that. It's kind of like when you guys and gals get finished with a car, you, number one, you want to go for that road test or that inspection and say, it's working, the lights are working, or it's running right. And then the customer gets it, they see everything's fine, they like the bill, they got it back when you promised, and you're their best friend and hero. That's feedback we need and hard to get. And I used to do radio. It was the same way, but it wasn't a 40-hour-a-week job. It was just one day a week, you know, like for 2.5 hours was my program. And that was just like that. You just talk and you hope you have listeners and maybe somebody someday sends a letter or calls you on the air and, you know, makes a comment. At this point, with today, with the COVID and all the remote training, I would even solicit complaints because at least I know I'm touching base with somebody.
I guess what I'm looking for is, how's the attendance, and of all the classes that you give and or your company gives, you know, what's really creaming to the top?
Wow. Topic wise is unpredictable. Used to be hybrids when they were newer, could pack classes in. Now it's anybody's guess. ADIS is a popular topic, but it really depends on the customer. You know, we don't do individual classes or we put out, you know, notices and everybody comes in. We give interactions with our major national accounts, with smaller accounts around the country, WDs and so forth. And then they organize and they send out our flyers or their flyers with our information to their customers. And it's feast or famine. Some customers are really good at packing a Zoom or GoToWebinar or a live class back in the days when we were doing live leader-led training. And some customers have never got the knack of it. They're working on it. They're conscientious, but they just don't know how to do it. A lot of it is prizes. Sounds silly. Food, prizes, not just a course subscription or the instructor necessarily.
Let's talk about ADAS training. I believe even if you're not going to be an ADAS center, if you're not going to invest the money, you've got to understand it. You've got to know it. You have to respect it so that you can make this the right decisions.
If you've got, I don't really mean to plug one ESI over another. I'm sure all data has got something very similar, but I noticed one thing that come to attention with Mitchell on Demand or Pro Demand, whatever, is there's a page for ADAS where you click on it when you ID your car, and it tells you the ADAS accessories the vehicle might have as option and what you need to do about it if you change something, do an alignment, replace a windshield, whatever. And that's so handy because you said you may or may not be an ADAS center. There's a lot of cars, Carm, that don't require any targets. I carry in like a little zipper bag with my box of ADAS sensors a bunch of tools that I can use without those targets. One of them is a simple carpenter's combination level. And you pop off on a Ford F-150, for example, you pop off the little plastic cover on the bumper and you literally take the carpenter's bubble level and you put it up right up to the sensor, the radar sensor, and you adjust the screw like you're adjusting a headlight. And then you take your scanner for a road test and you do the dynamic calibration. A lot of domestic vehicles do not require the targets for radar or cameras. So if you just do GM, Ford, and Chrysler, well, GM and Ford anyways, you don't even need to call the mobile tech or send it to the dealer or send it to that sublet shop down the street that's got the Autel, main target system. You can do a lot of this stuff yourself by going to the ESI, yeah.
By going to a class and learning it.
We're going to, yeah, definitely. You wouldn't even know it's in Mitchell unless somebody told you, probably.
Even if I'm not going to not necessarily be deep in it, I have to know it. I have to respect it. And there's a lot to learn.
Oh, definitely. Like in my class, I teach you how to use a fuzz buster and tell you which radars are at that frequency. There's some of the early Fords that we made back when it was just one big Delphi, not Delphi Aptiv, that we made for Ford in the early to mid-teens that are 24 gigahertz. And guess what? The radar detector will scream on those blind spot monitors if they're working. A thermal imager will show you if they're plugged in because they'll be warm. There's a lot of MacGyver tips that I like. And I like giving techs that. That is my energy, is when techs' light bulbs come on, you can tell by their expression. They love the MacGyver quick tips. You remember ever hearing about a piece of vacuum hose on top of a coil pack, using it as a device to take a test light and just barely get near the vacuum hose, and the spark would jump out of the vacuum hose and go to ground. Nobody got shocked, and you did a cylinder balance test. That was an old MacGyver type, innovative little tip. Didn't require a $10,000 tool and 4 hours of training and learning about how to decipher a waveform. I sometimes call it the Larry the Cable Guy tip to get her done. Because I'm guilty of being Egghead Jr. My dad, God bless him, when he was alive, would sometimes say, "You're making it too complicated, son." Yeah, you're right. Check the plugs first, okay?
That is so true. You're making it too complicated. Frankly, less is more. And I've learned an awful lot about that, being, having to write a lot in being a podcaster. Let's go cover quickly the love affair with cars we talked about earlier. What was your first car?
61 Chevy station wagon. Befriend me on Facebook and you'll see, go to my wall, you'll see this Parkwood wagon. I did some research actually on the company that came alongside and purchased Delphi Technologies as a brand, BorgWarner. And I found that transmission from that car that when I was a kid, I was always absolutely befuddled. How does this thing work? But it had a cable that when you pulled the cable out, the cable said overdrive, a little handle on the cable. When you pulled it out, it would engine decel like a normal manual. You have it in first gear, you're going 20 miles an hour, a lot of engine braking. You push it in, which was the default, it freewheeled. You could shift that dude without the clutch most of the time. It got 22 miles the gallon. It was like a 9-passenger huge car. And BorgWarner made that transmission, and Carm, The service manual is online.
No.
To fix that thing. Yeah. It was complicated even for its day. So I was impressed with that. Okay. That company bought Delphi. I'm really happy that they got that kind of attention to detail to have a 60-year-old vehicle's transmission service manual online.
So you're in class and there's some 20 and 30 something technicians in your class, and you're being Dave and you're talking about, you know, because I've seen you, you know, you'll do the curriculum, but then you'll take a, oh, there's a nut and there's a little side story. Okay. Because you're a great storyteller. And 20, 30 something's come up, and do you see or feel that they have a love affair with cars today like we had 20, 30 years ago?
It's different. I mean, the kind of sound I like to hear, a V8, I can't appreciate the four cylinder. My wife calls them the toy boat sound. Make that instead of a nice, you know, V8 small block. Yeah. That's different. They're tuners. A lot of them are diesel, big diesel performance people. You know, the Black Smoke Patrol. But I don't care, as long as they got something in that career field that floats their boat. Keep doing it.
Do technicians today and into the future, the young ones that are joining us and, you know, becoming apprentices, going to school, finding great opportunities, do they have a love affair as much as we had? Give me that four. I can repair that four barrel carburetor with my eyes closed. Do they? You see, feel that?
I think it's less, but it's still there. One thing is, how much can you really do in today's cars when you don't know much and you don't have many tools? You know, what could we do when we were young, Carm, with a screwdriver, a pair of pliers, and, you know, a Chevy small block? There's things you could do. You could adjust the carburetor. You can't do that now. Now you need a computer to change the code, to adjust the fuel mixture.
The love affair is that I can bring my geekness, my computer savvy, to this job. To me, the love affair is just get out of my way, give me a laptop.
The geek level folks need to be attracted, but they have to into this business, because that's where it is now. But they have to have the aptitude, and my dad would call it common sense, but that aptitude of taking things apart, putting them back together, not being, you know, all thumbs with hand tools. If you've got some aptitude and you love coding, you love computers, this is really a career to look at. But there are some people that just really need to stay in front of a computer and not touch a car.
And that's how we have to start selling it, that, you know, that look over there, that $60,000 computer on wheels. That's what how we have to start selling it in order to start recruiting apprentices and young people into our industry.
I have lately been kind of touched by some of the ladies. They're still a tiny minority, but they're notable people. If you think about, and I'm sure you've had some of the women technicians and shop owners on your podcast, they typically have to be. They have to be overcomers of a lot of prejudice and stereotypes. You know, well, you're a woman, you can't do this kind of work. This is man's work, which is just totally ridiculous. If it was all about your size, then a guy my size could never work in the army on a bulldozer. It'd have to only be the people over 6'5", you know, that have, you know, huge biceps. You just get bigger tools. You know, the bigger the truck, the bigger the vehicle, the bigger the tools you get. You know, it's not having to be a big, you're not doing sumo wrestling in this business. You get a bigger crane, you get a bigger pry bar. Pam Oakes does training for Delphi. Just does an absolute great job. I was just commenting on a social media blog for Helene out. I can't even think of her last name. She goes by Hell K on social media, but she's another, you know, rebel that's, you know, I'm a lady, I'm going to have my own shop, and she does a great job. You just run into these people and you go, okay, I need to encourage young ladies to enter this field. You know, as an educator, that's part of my job is recruiting and keeping the good people in here, not retiring early, going doing something else. I'll just wrench with the $100,000 of tools I have collected over the last 15 years. I'll just do this on the side. I'll work for a factory.
I got to tell you, it's so much fun getting together with you, because I never know where this is going to go. You have great stories. You're wise beyond your years. You've been in front of so many. You work for a great company. You're an important trainer in our industry. And I just love talking to you. I don't want an agenda. Actually, just want to hear you talk. So thanks for being here. Let's do some more of these, okay?
My honor. I just pinch myself every day. I'm having way too much fun to get paid.
Thanks. Dave Hobbs, Senior Field Trainer, Curriculum Developer, Delphi Technologies. Hey, he's going to be back. So, you know, write that down. Keep an eye out. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Carmen.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.